KBOO on Sunday, May 28th at 10 p.m. for a live broadcast of Thirsty City. Thirsty City is a monthly hip-hop night at The Know, and Sunday, May 28th will be a benefit for KBOO. Performers include Libretto, Mike Crenshaw, DJ Wicked, Burial Ground Sound, and many more. Again, that's Thirsty City, hosted by King Tim 33 and a third, Matt Fu, and Northern Draw, Sunday, May 28th, starting at 8 p.m. at The Know, 3728 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland, and also broadcast live at 10 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host Chris Hedges and Joe Sacco on Saturday, May 27th at 2 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Journalist Chris Hedges and award-winning cartoonist Joe Sacco wrote the best-selling book, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt, together. Their talk includes a discussion about sacrifice zones, areas in America that have been offered up for exploitation in the name of profit, progress, and technological advancement. Again, that's Chris Hedges and Joe Sacco, Saturday, May 27th at 2 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. This is Talking Earth. Your host tonight is Patrick Bocard. That is me. with a cough, and I am fortunate enough to be in the studio with a local poet from Vancouver, Ian Frederick Caton, was born in Berkeley, California in 1974. His parents live right next door to Sonny Barger. And who was Sonny Barger, Ian?
He was the founder of the Hells Angels.
Hang on one second. I don't think you were there yet.
Sonny Barger, he was the founder of the Hells Angels.
Wait one minute. All right. We are, I think you're there now.
Am I on? There we go.
Yeah, we are.
I hear myself now.
Yes. So he was the leader of the Hells Angels?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right there in Oakland.
And just across the street, also from Huey P. Newton.
Yeah.
Leader of another group.
The Black Panthers.
That we would know out here in KBOO. He was raised in MTV. Ian was. Not Huey. And was shocked by early music videos of Alice Cooper beheaded on a guillotine. He then started his first rock band in East San Jose by the age of 12. He now lives and writes in Vancouver with his wife and their two children. He holds a bachelor's degree from San Jose State University and a master's degree from Concordia University in Portland. And his work has appeared in Tool Review, T-U-L-E, Reed Magazine, Shadowboxing, and Perfume River Poetry Review, among others. And you are also the owner and occasional contributor to the blog Analog Verse at blogspot.com.
Yeah.
So you have a new book out called The Creative Records.
Yeah.
Which was brought to my attention by Barbara Morticella, among other people too. Several other people.
And I know her from the Ghost Town Poetry Open Mic up in Vancouver.
Which is run by Christopher Luna and Tony Partington.
Correct.
And yeah, it's I'm gonna kind of get out of the way in just a second. It's also, I mean, obviously, if you've been listening to the KBOO lately, you know that we're in the middle of a pledge drive. And while everyone's kind of leaving out there, if you want to call in and support KBOO right now after 10 p.m.,
go ahead, call in.
And yeah, please call 877-500-5266. 1-877-500-5266, and I believe there's still someone out there right now. Otherwise, you can go online at kboo.fm, and you can click on the donate, and you can actually choose to support a specific show if you wish. Would like you to support Talking Earth, but fine if you support another one as well. And I would also so you can also listen to this show and many others on that website as well. And I'm going to step out of the way and let Ian read. You're not reading from Creative Records just yet.
No, I was going to open with another piece that was published on Perfume River Poetry Review, issue number 3, their Night Terrors issue. It's they do an annual Perfume Torin Poetry Press. They do an annual. And this one is called Death is Like a River. And I think it's apropos with a lot of stuff that's going on right now with troops deploying in different regions around the world that who knows why they're being deployed. But this is called Death is Like a River. It's in two parts. One, death is like a river, the color of burgundy wine, flowing down the mountain toward the ocean, vast and wide, so much potential. Pinewood boxes carry dead soldiers, convoys of ships going down, never to be realized, planted, fruits of their achievements. There's a revival happening right now in my living room, daughter singing the blues, carving pumpkins. Oh, death, do your worst. Ghosts of our past haunt our present. Howling, rattling chains we ignore, these ghosts move through our lives unnoticed. Oh, death, you visit me each morning, embrace me at night. The dew on the grass soaks through my stockings, mud clings to my knees. Your bony fingers embrace my neck, tighten around my throat, this honeymoon of death, this funeral of eternity, this sleep. He comes to us when we do not expect him, this black-cloaked phantasm. He comes when we aren't ready, and visits our loved ones. I carve your white skull, empty it of its contents, light a candle to shine from your eyes. Part 2. So much potential wasted, young men and women returning in a pinewood boat, sailing that Burgundy River draped with the flag. It's getting colder these nights. I walked by two people on the street holding a sign, on my way to the theater. You can go deeper into the unknown if you choose, turning back from what is safe and comfortable into something else. I saw Anthony Bourdain kill a goat on TV last night, suffocated under watchful eye of the tribal king to keep in the blood. Ignore it, pretend it does not exist. Death comes when it comes. It does not know fair. It does not have principles or ethics. You don't have to go to Syria or Afghanistan. You can sit by a parking structure, hold a cardboard sign, meet death there too. Death does not discriminate. That cold chill lurks, returning into nothingness.
I was going to, I forgot to say something before you read that. Thanks for reading that, though. It's, I haven't been able to, I have read your book, your new book. I haven't read your older stuff, unfortunately. To go back, you are in a band. Well, you said it wasn't a band.
Well.
And we heard that at the beginning of the show. That is actually a collective and you know, within.
Yeah, what we heard was Laura's Bush, and it was called a piece called Ice Cream Chant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I forgot to actually tell everyone that that's what we were
listening or might not be a part of that. I'm not ascertained to be able to tell that for right now.
It's kind of up in, I mean, it's kind of like a Schrodinger's band.
Well, it's very hush-hush and super secret, and at this time, we don't know who all the members are.
Okay.
And so it might not even be a band. It might just be sound or noise. Who knows? Most of it's just samples and loops played over each other.
Okay. I did enjoy it, though. And I enjoyed your poem as well. And you had another one you wanted to read from Creative Records?
Yeah, this is from Creative Records. This is called Step-by-Step Instructions Illustrating Why the World Waves to the West for Scythoth. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Scythoth. He was a DJ over there at KFJC Foothill Junior College in Los Altos Hills. And he started playing extreme black metal and death metal when he was about 60 years old. And he would wear a big cloak, and he'll come in there with... His name's not really Scythoth, and I love that those DJs down there, they all have like monikers, and they can go in there with like a fake name and become that character and become that person. And he's just, he was Scythoth, and he would just became that Egyptian god, and he would come in there with a voice just like from hell, and he would just sing, and he would scream into the microphone, and he would come in there, and he would introduce the song, and it would just be... He would be out of his mind, and he's such an important part, an important character for any community collective like this, like what we have here. And
where was this?
Foothill Junior College,
out in
Los Altos Hills.
Los Altos Hills,
near Palo Alto.
Okay,
so this is Step-by-Step Instructions Illustrating Why the World Waves to the West for Scythoth. Step 1. Picture a wooden box, no bigger than a shoebox, built maybe with dark mahogany, thin, light, and then cut a hole into it for the sound to escape. An echo chamber, air to vibrate, wind to get trapped inside, and sound to resonate, to fill, expand, escape. Then wrap this box with rubber bands of varying sizes, different thicknesses and lengths. Any old office supply cache of rubber bands will do. the ones used to hold together legal briefs or bundles of banknotes, rolled up in canvas money bags, long ones, short ones, pulled tight. Maybe the long ones are wrapped around twice. Just three or four bands would do, or even just two. Now pluck this note to make a sound. Pluck this rubber band. Listen to the sound. Let it fill the box. Let it present itself to the room. The room can be another echo chamber of sorts, if you will. Then pluck it again into a kind of rhythm. Repeat that sound. Repeat that note. Repeat that rubber band. Repeat that motion. Repeat that stroke. Repeat that gesture. Repeat that twang. Repeat that cadence. Repeat that action. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again once more. Repeat that oscillation. Repeat that tone. Repeat that sound. Repeat that note. Repeat that motion. Hear it again and hear it again and hear it again once more as it vibrates and echoes and transcends. Repeat that gesture. Repeat that twang. Repeat that noise. Repeat that action again and again and again once more, and then listen. There are portals available to us. This box is one. This room another. These portals can take us to other places. These portals can take us beyond. There are portals available to us. This box is one, this room another. These portals can take us to other places. These portals can take us beyond. Now picture a Y-shaped branch cut from the trunk of an apple tree and string brightly colored thread to its base in three or four wraps. Sections of Kelly green, yellow, turquoise, and maybe even red to form a sort of handle to hold the base of the Y, and then string fishing lines between the top of the Y to traverse the divide with bottle caps running through the line. Four or five bottle caps, holes punched through their centers, fishing lines pulled taut, bottle caps shaking, first rapidly for brief moments, like wind rushing through branches of trees, shick, 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 and then again that chatter of bottle caps like bones, like teeth palpitating, fluttering with the cold, a flourish of sound, the bottle caps flicker and convulse, seizures of bottle caps shaking and chatter, a shake, 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 and then, gathering control, it begins to shake in rhythm, moving through the room, shake, shake, accompanying the drone of the box, the twang of those rubber bands, shake, a shake, while holding the handle, listen to the echo, hear the note repeating, shake, shake, hearing now the vibrations as the ensemble plays together, shake a shake, as the gesture coincides in harmony, as the resonance becomes new ritual, shake shake, as the ritual takes on new meaning, as the reality begins to melt away, shake a shake, now this portal begins to open, and we are taken to other worlds, shake shake, these other worlds take on new meaning, and our reality begins to shake. Change, shake a shake. We are not the same as we once were. This room is not the same. There are portals available to us for visions of otherworldly experiences that can lift us, take us beyond what we know, beyond who we are, that can take us to extra normal experiences, violations of consensual reality. A community radio station can be one. There are portals that can take us beyond the daily grind of due dates, post dates, target shipments, bring us to visions of beauty, freedom, or shocking uglinesses, disturbances of our psyche, fill us with terror. A gallery or a museum can be one. There are portals that must remain open, that bring us beyond the dull and dry reality of safety and safety measures, outside the norm, outside limitations of what's possible, and into the mysterious and the beautiful, into fantasies of flesh and spirit, fantasies of the mind, fantasies of the body. A box, a bookstore, or a library can be one.
There are portals that are available to us that will deliver us to out-of-body experiences, lift our visions above our heads, looking down upon our bodies and our movements and responses. Watch now how we interact with this world, empathize with each other. A theater or a concert hall can be one. Portals that will make available to us other ways of seeing things, other languages, to speak in backward tongues of Hebrew and Arabic, Germanic tongues of reality, of time moving backward, coming to a standstill, coming to a stop eventually, and then shedding its skin, unfurling its wings, and is released from its cocoon of surreality and sleep. This poetry reading is one. A website can be one. A record store can be one. A restaurant can be one. A church or a synagogue can be one. A temple can be one. A school or a classroom can be one. Your bedroom can be one. Your bed can be one. You can be one. You are one. One.
Thank you.
So, now I know why. Well, one of the reasons everyone, a bunch of people have been like talking you up to me, and it's that you do, you know, you do voices like the black metal kind of thing. I'm assuming that's where that comes from.
Well, yeah, everything comes from black metal, right?
No, not everything. It's really hard to do that voice that long, though.
It is.
Yeah, I know. That's a tough. I mean, you could do like return policy. We accept returns with 30 days of purchase. But if I'm going to read the entire thing, then it won't. You know, the Cookie Monster voice works better. Death metal voice, you know, like
Facebook of death, the meeting of pain, oh, you the got that. I want me to lie.
That's good.
Yeah, well, I've done that. That's like a whole piece I've done a long time ago, and I'm sick of it already. So, but I'm just trying to give you a little bit of a rest for your throat because I know how hard that is.
Thank you.
I mean, and I hope our listeners out there appreciate it because that's pretty rough to actually do. I'm
influenced by King Diamond and the high pitched screamo that he like. He invented that scream before the Cookie Monster. This is a full or 6 years before Cookie Monster was King Diamond and Merciful Death and doing that. Grandma!
Did a good job of that. I can't reach that. You know, I can't. Yeah. My voice doesn't go that high. you know, but yeah, he does the high pitched voice. I was thinking more like Dark Throne and.
Oh yeah.
Those guys have like the weird, like they sound like there's an elf in the corner of like some evil elf thing in the corner, like, you know, going like while they're doing blast beats. And Kostro's bands don't tour for the obvious reason they can't do it live.
Well, King Diamond's playing this.
No, King Diamond can do it live.
Las Vegas.
King Diamond can do that live. Oh, I'm talking about the, you know, the Norwegian.
You got to go on a road trip and go to Sweden.
Yeah. But,
thank you for letting me perform that.
No, that was awesome. Thank you for performing it. And to be honest, I mean, looking at it on the page, I had no idea that I was going to get that kind of voice vocals out of you. I hadn't, you know, and I'm very pleasantly surprised. That was awesome. Ian, did you find your next piece?
Yeah.
And you feel up, you know, yeah, your throat's recovered enough?
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to do a series. This is 1, 2, 3, 4 poems in a row.
Okay.
This one's for Dave. And this is for Dave Fisher, who's out there in Radio Land somewhere. And so I walk with my head in the clouds. It's April out here in Southwest Washington. Big, puffy white clouds, cumulus and stratus, the stratocumulus and whatnot. Grand canyons of cotton over my head, Manhattan skylines of fluffy white floating into the sky, Titanic ships of stuffing sinking into the horizon under pure blue sky behind red-tailed hawks, circling, surfing tidal waves of thick clouds and breaking on the shores, the gray, wet clouds ready to burst vertical watercolor strokes. There are four layers of sky, the low, puffy white, the gray, heavy, wet, the thin, white, high clouds, and the blue sky above even all that. This morning, driving to work, I saw five layers, all that, plus the low, damp fog, driving through my windshield wipers, sky down low, tires splashing puddle, sky in a pothole, wet southwest Washington in April. There is so much going on above my head, I barely notice until it's almost too late. A garter snake, coiled and pissed, upset that I nearly stepped on him. He hisses. Pointed tongue flicks in defiance, the vertical yellow line, like a twisted road in the mountains, back and forth. The little guy is poised, ready to fight, upset at my neglect of attention. It's April in southwest Washington, and I am reminded of the snake we caught in my neighbor's garage last year, terrorizing their 7-year-old daughter, another garter my son and I captured, placed in the plastic terrarium, and returned to shores of Whipple Creek, I with my bad knee shaky on my feet, and Riley balancing down by the rocks, saying goodbye to our slithering friend as we released the serpent from the container into the wild, holding back tears, or the time Shelley followed me back to my cubicle, stuck to my windshield, a praying mantis, bright green and beautiful. I kept her stored in my empty pop container after removing the ice and plastic straw, another gift from spring in southwest Washington, where she watched me work at my desk for the rest of the day, both of us trapped. And when I drove home, I stopped by the pet store and bought that $14 terrarium to house the mantis. And it was the kids who named her Shelley while we searched for leaves and twigs to furnish her new apartment, as I explained her beautiful bright color, her exoskeleton, and the fact that her hands looked like she was praying to a god. And a month later, when we finally did let her go, both Kira and Riley were sobbing, saying their goodbyes to their friend, their pet, their praying mantis, Shelley, who flew up into the sky, dancing among the clouds, out here in southwest Washington, the big, puffy white clouds, cumulus and stratus, the stratocumulus and whatnot. Hmm. Next one's called In Spiral Verses. This is another springtime poem. A lot of clouds in this one. In Spiral Verses. He was waiting to put down verses when the right form of inspiration was to strike. Who knows what kind of stuff inspiration was made of, but he had his net nearby just in case it would creep by. That magical technique of capturing lines by writing lines had worked before. Why not try it again? Although he hated thinking of himself in the third person, almost as much as he detested writing verses about verses. The clouds were thick and shaped of creatures, white on top and heavy with gray inspiration. Ball players in the park were speaking encouraging words to one another as inspiration smiled from above. There was a soft breeze, and in the distance you could hear the cheering words from parents and spectators, inspiration. Baseball is one of those sports. Hit one of four. Writing haiku can be like that too. Hmm. All right, this one's called Driving to Big Sur. Driving to Big Sur, Highway 1, dog out window, melt banana on radio. Driving to Big Sur, Highway 1 South, dog out window, girlfriend in passenger seat, ocean emerald green, white head smashing up against the rocks. Driving to Big Sur, melt banana on stereo, dog out window, barking at the surf, late summer heat, early autumn sunset reflecting off choppy sea, ocean emerald green. Driving to Big Sur, associations, Miller, Kerouac, and Ferlinghetti, forest closing in on me, sea in emerald green. Dig the way the sun scatters on choppy waves, seagulls circle above, perhaps over some floating corpse, lifeless and gray out beyond these cliffs. friend or possible family member to barking sea lions, mourning, howling at the tide, nestled in forests of kelp, brown fleshy pulp, few gulls resting atop, slowly bobbing up and down, mocking, a perch, they wait for lunch to swim along. Driving to Big Sur, Teresa riding shotgun, dog out window, melt banana on hi-fi, late Indian summer heat, ocean emerald green, sun refracting on white heads far down below, sea lions barking, my dog, she barks too. Rage with the glory, man.
It's a nice triptych.
Thank you.
I didn't realize they were kind of related, but yeah, they are. And what is I do want to say that I wanted to find a Mel Banana CD in the library here, but I couldn't find one.
We'll have to get you one.
So they'll have to, I don't know. I could go online, but that's okay. You know, you. But if you want to go listen to Mel Banana, which is the best album, would you say, Ian?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
The one with the...
I've got one record of theirs.
Isn't there like the egg with the... There's the one with the egg that's breaking open and there's a crocodile coming out.
Yeah, I think that's the one I have.
Yeah, that's the famous one. So that's the one. But I've seen them live. I think a lot of the ones are very... There's been a couple I've heard.
Yeah, I saw them about 20 years ago. They opened up for the Melvins and they just blew me away. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right, this one's called The Cat's Okay.
Okay, and when the cat's... After that, I'm going to have to do some announcements after The Cat's Okay.
Okay.
Let's make sure he's okay.
The cat's okay. My family's in turmoil because of the cat, but he's okay. I saw him eating from a can of tuna this morning. The cat was saved from the Humane Society when he was a kitten. We were surprised to find out he was a Maine Coon. Imagine that, a brand name kitty from the animal shelter. Now, who would get rid of a cat like that? Maine Coon kitties have a lot of fur, and this one is no different. Each summer we had to get him a little lion's haircut, give him a break from the heat. The cat's been drinking from the milk dish again, even though he never really acquired the taste for milk. He's always been much more interested in whatever it is you are doing, taking a shower, splashing the water, braving the vacant bathtub after it had been used, still wet with micro puddles, or helping me drink my glass of ice water at night. The cat needs another haircut. I fear we're going to have another heat wave soon. But he's so vain, he's always embarrassed whenever he comes home with that new circus lion's haircut. The cat's name is Jake Mulder Kelly Caton. Caton because my wife and I got married. Kelly because that's his maiden name. Mulder because of the X-Files. His brother was the late Bruno Scully Kelly Caton. They would often solve mysteries together, like who put a dead bird in Mom's slipper. And Jake, because that's just who he is. Jake was never that affectionate of me, being his dad, until one dark and rainy spring evening in May, I saved him from the rooftop of our new house in Portland. And being a California kitty, he wasn't used to the weather we get up here in the Northwest, and so he meowed for quite some time. After I climbed up and carefully brought him down, he would not stop telling me how much he appreciated that. But the cat's okay, even though he won't eat anything. To even that can of tuna, he's now turned up his nose. Because he knows it's getting to be time to go see his brother Bruno.
No. No. Is he still with us, or? No. Okay. So it's a sad poem after all.
You got to have a dead cat poem, don't you?
Well, I have a cat poem, but it's not about the cat dying. Actually, I take it back. I wrote a story about a cat passing away, but it's convoluted. It involves time travel, and I go down to, the person like me in the story. I don't want to talk about this too long because we don't have that much time. The person like me in the story goes down to store the litter box and everything, and he gets beaten up and eaten by another version of that cat.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So she, you know, she gets the knocks me out, and then it's a weird convoluted thing, and I don't know if it makes that much sense in the actual fiction version. I do have to make a couple announcements. First off, KBOO was offered a Bill of the Month membership since the very beginning of the station. Now you can be a sustaining member without any of the paperwork. We here at KBOO Community Radio encourage everyone who donates to become a monthly donor. Our members that give to us monthly provide the most secure and stable funding for the station. It's easy and secure. You can set up your monthly donation through your checking account. We can also set up your membership with a debit or credit card. In fact, I have done that. Monthly giving helps us cut down on the number of membership drive days we air annually. Also, monthly members are automatically entered into all of our sweepstakes drawings. Go to kboo.fm/give today to become a sustaining member online. You can also call us at 503-231-8032. That is during the day, or unfortunately, calling the regular pledge drive number right now will not do much good. You'd have to leave a message.
There's one guy back there.
There is? Oh, okay. So if you call 877-500-5266, you can become a sustaining member of KBOO like me. And I give like $10 a month. I think I give $10 a month. It might be more than that. I'm not really keeping track. Who can? But, you know, I mean, I'm able to afford it, and I don't make that much. I'm only a poet. So call 877-500-5266 if you want to support KBOO now. And that was one announcement. I had a couple others. I do have to, I would like to ask you, Ian, do you have any readings coming up?
No, not right now.
No, you are probably going to be at the next Tony's, though.
Yeah, I'll be reading at Tony's.
And that would be on?
The first Monday of June.
And when does it usually start? Because that is a question that's been asked of me, and I never give a good answer.
It's supposed to be 8:30, but it usually doesn't start until at least 9 or 9:30.
Okay. Yeah, I always thought it was like 8 o'clock. So
no, 8:30.
So 8:30 supposedly, but really 9. Yeah. And this Thursday, May 18th, at 7 p.m. at Mother Foucault's bookshop, there is a Marty Christensen book release and celebration of Marty Christensen, who is unfortunately no longer with us. Walt Curtis wanted me to promote this. He was a friend with...
Walt Curtis is a genius.
Walt Curtis is a genius, and he was also a friend of Marty Christian, who was also a genius, very much so. This reading and book release is going to be going on from 7 to 10 p.m. at Mother Foucault's at 523 Southeast Morrison Street on Thursday. There's also another event that night. At Backstory Books in Southeast Portland. That is an event hosted by Dan Raphael, who's also involved with KBOO now. Corrigan and Burba, and unfortunately, Brittany Corrigan. Okay, Brittany Corrigan and Tiffany Burba, who are both poets. Brittany Corrigan has been on Talking Earth before, I believe. It's been a while, though. And they're both Portland poets, and they have new books out, and they're reading at Backstory Books. And I do have to, moving on to June, because I got to promote my own reading that, wow, I'm not even invited to it on Facebook. Oh my God. Is it, no, it's not the New Poet Challenge. There's nothing on Facebook about it. Oh no. I don't even know. I hope it's existing. Anyway, New Poet Challenge is an event hosted by Curtis White Carroll and his wife. And I am going to get so much grief. Amanda Cochran Hellstrom White. And they invite new poets to come up and read. And then the next night, they usually have another feature event. And I thought it was reading on the 7th. And New Poet Challenge is at Pairings Wine Bar. Okay, well then I'm just going to promote John Dooley's reading because he has a reading on June 6th as well. Hamill and Trial is playing and it's at the Jade Lounge at 8 p.m. and that's on June 6th. I have a reading sometime on June 7th, but I see if I can get there. So enough of me. Ian, please get me away from the mic.
Okay, can I read something?
Yes, please.
I've got about two more I really want to get through.
Let's go through them.
This one's called Rosebud Anthem / I'm Set Free. Band thinking guitar. Must have pro gear, pro attitude. Sounds like Patti Smith hooked up with Elvis Presley and had a love child named El Duce, whom they beat and molest regularly, stealing all foul ideas. Guitar available. Riff-based guitarist seeking band for recording, gigs, touring, influences, Black Flag, Black Sabbath, Big Country. Attention, drummers needed. Age 20 to 30. Must be able to groove, play in the pocket, have transportation, kit, place to practice. Influences, Buddy Rich, Dave Lombardo, Danny Carey. Drummer available for recording and or gigs. Can play drums and percussion, read charts, play various styles. Need drum set. Synth pop duo seeks guitarist. Think Pet Shop Boys Rape Merzbow. Female singer looking to start an all-female 70s krautrock cover band. Influenced by Throbbing Gristle, Can, Tangerine Dream, Leonard Cohen. I play bass and keys. Needed, drums, guitar, anything else? Drums, bass needed. Metal band seeking the most brutal rhythm section ever. Must be able to play fast with 3 exclamation points. Face paint and ritualistic animal sacrifices optional. Christian guitarist sounds like Alex Golnick from Testament and Mike Weed of King Diamond, looking to start experimental country swing combo. Hip-hop crew seeking turntablist. Must be able to scratch like Grandmaster Flash, throw down beats like DJ Yella, and observe the Shomer Shabbat. Metal guitarist looking for drums and bass. Collaboration? Picture this. KK Downing from Judas Priest meets Ian Curtis from Joy Division in a dark cafe for multiple, intimate, discreet hookups. Smart. Angry. Gay. Slap bass needed to complete funk-based metal band. We are a spicy Tex-Mex rock band called El Fuego. Sounds like Fishbone crossed with Toad the Wet Sprocket in Spanglish. Singer looking for drums, bass, guitar. Must have rehearsal space. Transportation, pro gear, easy girlfriend, solid weed connection, job, place to crash. I sound like Mike Patton meets Ian Asprey. Putting down the copy of the Free Metro newspaper, I had my own ideas. Drum set to the side, not in the center as is traditional. Guitar on one side, bass on the other. Maybe keyboards off to the left, hidden in the shadows. Maybe rhythm guitar next to and in front of that. Trading riffs, trading leads, dueling guitars, finger-picking and dive-bombing together in sync, matching each other for speed and technical difficulty. Each pushes the other to go faster, shred harder as singer goes from side to side, free to interact with audience, leading the cheer in a sort of call and response. A sea of people below, holding lighters up high as far as can see, with huge double bass drum set as backdrop, directly in the middle, anchoring the heavy metal madness. Musicians dressed in tight jeans or spandex of multicolored patterns, or parachute pants, snug, form-fitting, but with enough room, enough give, allows the singer to moonwalk or do the splits, leading the heavy metal troupe in a sort of rock and roll human pyramid.
pyramid with singer on top, standing tall on bass player and guitarist, mutton chops, Fu Manchu mustaches, mullets blowing in the breeze, standing tall in front of drums on massive riser, 8 feet tall with lighted steps, elevating this huge mammoth kit of toms and cymbals and snare, waving arms to a sea of arms going from side to side, 99 red balloons, thousands of screaming Russians at the Moscow Music Peace Festival, overjoyed that they can finally buy a Big Mac or wear a pair of Levi's and partake in the glorious riches and spoils of capitalism, the lifestyle of the West, joining the world in this rock and roll economy with pearl inlay guitar frets, gold-plated pick guards, and money rolling in from record sales, CD sales, world tours, MTV videos, t-shirt sales, picture discs, commemorative belt buckles, officially licensed image printed on soda cups, given away at hamburger joints with the purchases of extra value meals, king-sized bumper stickers, back patches, the cover of Circus magazine, Rolling Stone, keychains that double as bottle openers in the shape of the band's logo, with laser-cut forged stainless steel, officially licensed shot glasses and roach clips and posters and commemorative plates, charm necklaces and bracelets, earrings, collectible pins and wristwatches and wall clocks, bar stools and overhead pool table lights and mirrors with officially licensed band mascot painted on it upon which you can chop up lines of coke, beach blankets and skateboards, all manner of tchotchkes and commemorative stuffs, coffee cups, baseball hats and license plate frames, comic books and video games, reissued CDs, remastered gold CDs, platinum albums, greatest hits, best of live 1, 2, and 3, the tribute album, anything to commemorate the artist, the band, a pittance for the influence felt throughout the world because of their career, because of that one album, because of that one song, that one chorus, that one riff, that one line repeated over and over and over, a chant, a slogan for an entire generation, a rallying cry, now so long overused, cliche in its hyperbole, that overplayed and wore-down saying, but so true when played live, when heard at the anniversary concert, the farewell tour, it brings a tear to the eye of your gym teacher as he remembers fondly his youth so well, a time so fleeting and true and pure in its idealism, that one song that brought people to action, that ended apartheid, that brought down the wall, that brought people together, that affected the masses, an entire generation of consumers conceived to this number one hit, invitations to the masquerade ball at the Playboy Mansion, Ferrari, Harley Davidson motorcycle, indoor swimming pool, open bar, free jukebox, Pac-Man arcade game, and Pinbot pinball machine with unlimited credits, helicopter pads, speedboat, yacht, jet skis. This is my rock and roll fantasy turned nightmare. No, none of that. I had my own ideas. Drums on the side, maybe percussion, flanking kit, center stage, sort of, but for musical communication, much more important than showmanship and stage design. And next to that, electronic drum pads for experimentation and punctuation and color in some songs. Then next to that, electronic percussion flows naturally into synthesizers and Hammond B3 organ. And next to that, maybe a grand piano with a keyboard on top to carry the rhythm for some jazz-influenced tunes that could really extend out, where musicians could really express themselves and their musical ideas, improvising with extended solos, make the crowds really lose their minds, and that would take about 3 or 4 musicians in the back to hold down the rhythm, the drums, and keys, the percussion, and the bass player would have to have lots of communication with the back, maybe moving freely from playing his bass to playing some leads on a standalone synth, sometimes even playing a bass line with foot pedals while carrying the lead riff on a Moog. And the guitar should be up front, maybe 2 or 3, rhythm, lead, and the singer playing a Martin 6-string acoustic, and every once in a while picking up his 12-string Ovation for certain songs. and maybe even something different. Maybe a fiddle player or a saxophonist. Maybe a whole horn section with trombone, sax, and trumpet, just to add color for certain songs from our later era, songs composed later in life when we started experimenting with other instruments in the rock and roll combo. Maybe we would have an entire catalog of rock and roll music that for the first 10 years were just guitar, bass, and drums, and then when we added keyboards and piano, people thought we were really selling out. But we were finally getting a taste of that commercial success with some top 10 songs. We were finally able to mellow out a bit and make music that you could play with your mom in a minivan as she took you to soccer practice. We were finally getting that crossover success with cameos by Q-Tip from A Tribe Called Quest, or Cher, or a solo by Yo-Yo Ma. We were finally getting those Grammy Awards, selling trucks with our music, and our music was featured on soundtracks of films starring Al Pacino or directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. But instead, we weren't selling out. We were just expanding our musical ideas, and that was when we brought in the horn section and the all-black female background singers for added soul. And it was then that our old school true fans from way back in the day would come back to us, and it was then that they realized that all of our musical evolutions as artists would make sense, and we would become a national treasure, prized by critics who once scorned us worldwide. I had my own ideas. None of that heavy metal bullshit, that superficial machismo, fake toughness, sorry state of affairs that rock and roll had become. This was going to be a real throwback, rooted in songwriting and craftsmanship, but able to jam, open for improvisation, open for creative interpretation. This was going to be real.
I love that piece.
Thank you.
That's definitely a mouthful, though. Yes, I love that.
So can I just say that this book is on sale right now at Powell's Bookstore.
And, as well as other places, too.
Well, at Powell's and on Amazon and at Mother Foucault's.
Mother Foucault.
Mother Foucault.
Yeah, got to say it right, or I might get in trouble.
Well, I think in America, you can say whatever you want after...
Sorry, I'm quoting Bob Dylan. I shouldn't make fun of Bob Dylan. I'm going to have a visit from somebody, and that won't go well. Did you want to read part of Saddest Poem in the World? Because I don't think we're going to be able to fit that in.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Do you want to read like Primal Scream? No, is that your poem?
The Saddest Poem in the World.
You're not going to be able to finish it, though.
We'll see.
Okay, hurry.
You'll fade me out.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
The saddest poem in the world. I have a competition in me. I want no one else to succeed. Daniel Day-Lewis, There Will Be Blood. Go to hell, Chester! Isabella Rossellini, The Saddest Music in the World. A decree was sent down through the interwebs of social media to have poets gather in Portland on a cold and rainy night in February to the last remaining dive bar on West Burnside and recite the saddest poem in the world. It was to be a contest, and the prize, an award, and title that could never be taken away, to have created the saddest poem in the world, plus 24 beautiful chapbooks printed and published in full color and hardback by the Independent Publishing Resource Center. But bookstores were falling by the wayside as gentrification was in the air, brick and mortar establishments closing their doors to be replaced by high-rent condos and high-tech startups with light rail max train stops built right on their front doorsteps. So writers were down and food stamps short as bar tabs neglected in hopes of buying ramen noodles to feed thyself and moleskin journals with enough number 2 pencils and erasers to put down thoughts and thus create the saddest poem in the world. So when that date had finally come, poets arrived from far away and dreary places such as Seattle, Washington, and Brooklyn, New York, where the rent was already too damn high, and foggy, cold, and wet London town, as well as Portland regulars who had moved from San Diego years before things had got this bad. And on this cold day in February, the ice rain had greeted the morning with a coating of slick and freeze and yuck that was sure to put the sting in anybody's skin. bare hands and noses and cheeks pelted and stabbed from the droplets like daggers and needles fell surely from the heavens that had cursed them on this day when the poets would gather in the last remaining dive bar on West Burnside to hear and recite the saddest poem in the world. Entire sections of Burnside and Broadway were shut down to accommodate the street parade of anarchist clowns on tall bicycles and starving artists selling their works from covered awnings and curbsides, a marching band from Beverly Cleary Elementary School to play John Philip Sousa marches, Stars and Stripes Forever, Hail to the Spirit of Liberty and the Battle Hymn of the Republic. John Brown's body lies a moldering in the grave, said John Brown's body lies a moldering in the grave. John Brown's body lies a moldering in the grave. His soul is marching on. Pimps offered hookers at discount prices, 2-for-1 go around, rebate special, close out hand job, one night only, first ones on the house, no customers refused, no glory holes reused. There were tall ones, fat ones, skinny ones. There were ladies with mustaches and girls in sequined go-go boots. There were short ones, pretty ones, freckled ones, girls with afro puffs, and ladies of the night with Adam's apples protruding from their long, thin necks. And as the sun went down and the festivities turned solemn, while neon lights turned on, reflecting in the puddles and the potholes and gutters, people began to assemble at this last remaining dive bar on West Burnside to hear recited the saddest poems in the world. And then somebody filled the jukebox with old cowboy songs. Ray Price and Roy Rogers singing about his dead horse Trigger, and Merle Haggard telling, "If we make it through December." Lefty Frizzle and Johnny Cash, George Jones and Hank Williams crooning, "I'm so lonesome I could cry." Then as drinks began to pour and Portland sixes began to look like Hollywood eights, there were stars in our eyes as the poets made the roll call. A quorum was assembled and Frank Soss took the floor as MC, opened the event with a reading of Emily Dickinson, "Success is counted sweetest by those who never succeed," and then introduced Seattle poet Kelly Russell Gadon, who read a piece written in couplets entitled Coupling, about how she is a nightmare to be married to, and silent went the entire room as Frank Soss took a knee. Next up came Trevino Brings Plenty, a Lakota poet who brought with him a piece about being the savior to white people as his entire culture is systematically ripped away, replaced with a computer science degree and a career entering code for some company who makes it easier to evict tenants for delinquency. After that came famed author Rick Moody, who had taken a cattle boat all the way from Brooklyn, New York, by way of Panama, to read a piece he had completed about his mixtape collection that had now become obsolete, the cassette and the piece both composed on a file format no longer in use. Then came crowd favorite Tommy Gaffney of Louisville, who read a piece and rubbed his hair about Kentucky bourbon and working on that night train. He was the one to receive the loudest applause thus far. Afterward, a Hungarian poet named George Zertz from London took the floor to read a piece he had composed entirely of haikus about the paradox of an existentialist crisis from a genocide if the people are no longer in existence. Then came the Mike G, who read a piece and blew in his harmonica, cursing John Keats and singing to his 10-year-old neighbor girl about blood and tears and grinding flesh and suffering in a meat grinder while churning out the bourgeois workers and middle-class consumers, complete with safe land grabs and legalized ethnic cleansings. "You know, spring cleaning's gonna happen every spring!" Finally came a kid who had been sitting in the shadows in the back drinking seltzer on ice with slices of citrus and read a piece entitled Primal Scream that went something like this. Primal Scream. "Cursed as a boy with the pure voice of a soprano, I spent all my days howling into the wind. As a child, we'd sing songs composed by the dead and sung in dark churches of stained glass and stone. We'd dress in red choir robes with white linen surplus draped over lace tunic, collars starched stiff.
Oh, cursed as a boy with the pure voice of a soprano, I spent all my days howling into the wind. Alone, my primal screams echoed off cliffs above the beach, my throat inhaling sand and sea. I'd scream until my voice turned blood, and every day bring myself to do it again once more. I'd see the nightingale reflected in the moonlight as it flew out above me on those cliffs. And like the nightingale, I'd see him following the river, flying always out beyond the sea. He took his son out to the beach to wash away his sins and feel the ocean's tide and pull. And I watched as the father submerged his head into the waves, baptized with salt water and seaweed. Though mountains may fall and rivers wash away everything, I howled as the wind while it rushed through me. Just as rivers rush into the ocean while mountain streams flow and empty under the bridges. Pedals spinning round and round as folk on bicycle cross those bridges moving from east to west. I saw police arrest a man on MLK in Alberta just for being in love. Cursed as a boy with the pure voice of a soprano, I spent all my days howling into the wind. And when he was done, there was a silence that hit the floor. And even the state lottery video slot machines went quiet because everybody knew they had just heard the saddest poem in the world recited in the last remaining dive bar on West Burnside. And the tears fell slowly at first, just a single drop from the lady bartender and back, which were followed too by the drag queens sitting nursing cosmopolitans and Manhattans. Then, too, the whiskey drinkers began to cry, one by one, and even the beer drinkers were bawling, shaking physically into their pints, as the entire ball was howling with lament like a low chant, a sort of drone similar to Tibetan throat singing. Ah, it was an epiphany, a release, some sort of relief, because everybody knew they had just